Hi, I'm Dr. Pam Peek, and welcome to episode 278 of Her, the podcast where you're going to hear the naked truth about her mind, her body, her life, and today, her nose. What? Yeah, what is she smelling out there? We're going to be talking about, well, smells. That's right. I knew you're going to love this thing. I can just tell it out there. I'm just empathing. Well, we've got a terrific show. Before we begin, just know that this episode is made possible by our wonderful friends at Smarty Pants Women's Vitamins, the delicious once-a-day gummies that contain all of the essential vitamins, minerals, and omega oils customized just for women. To learn more, hop on over to SmartyPantsVitamins.com. And here is your first reminder to click on iTunes after this episode to rate and review the show. I love hearing from you. Your feedback is fabulous. And so I want to hear from you. I'm going to be giving you another reminder at the end of the episode. All right, it's time for Her.
Her, the podcast.
The naked truth about women.
Her mind, her body, her life. It's all about her.
So, oh my gosh, what the heck is smellosophy? Smellosophy. Smells and smellosophy. Okay, when I read about this wonderful research and work done by Dr. Ann Sophie Barwich, I said, honey, I'm just hopping on this one right away. And then, happily, she wrote a book about it, Smellosophy, What the Nose Tells the Mind. Now, Dr. Barwich is a cognitive scientist, an empirical philosopher, and historian of science, technology, and the senses. She's assistant professor at Indiana University in Bloomington, and she divides her time between the Department of History and Philosophy of Science and the Cognitive Science Program. I'm exhausted just listening to this. Oh my gosh. Dr. Barwich, Anne, welcome to the Her podcast.
Thank you for having me.
Well, what in the heck is this? Did you just make this up, this whole smellosophy thing? Come on, how did you put all this together? This is so nuanced, so novel. I just jumped on it. So tell us about it.
So the term itself, smellosophy, started out as a joke, actually. Because I started out as a philosopher, I got more and more interested in science and to understand the mind through actually the nose, through the way we smell. And a friend of mine once in a pub said, so wait, you're a philosopher and you do smell, so you're smellosopher. And I thought, oh wow, I'm using that one. Like, this is just such a term that gets you, it stops you for a moment in your tracks and makes you think about what does that even mean. And I got obsessed with a couple of different ideas related to the sense of smell, because it's about cognition, it's about the body, it's about the way we do science in terms of how do we study the brain, but also how do we talk about our own perception and to what extent are we so much focused on vision? How does it look like if we do something else like smell, but there's so many other senses we can look at?
I love it. I just love it. So why smell for you? Why?
Oh, it started by accident. I was interested in biological organisms and how to classify them, and I stumbled over a talk about smell. I thought, I have no idea how we smell. Turns out, this is an open question. Not many people do. And I thought, well, how difficult can it be? It's always kind of described as this primitive and simple sense. Well, it turns out every time you start with how difficult can it be, you're being led down a wormhole, a rabbit hole, and that's what precisely what happened. And what captured my attention, what kept my attention, is precisely the fact that it challenges all your assumptions about the senses, about the way you think your mind is working. Because when we talk about vision, we talk about objects. Visual objects or objects of perceptions, and even if you think about hallucinations or illusions, we have a visual image in our mind. And I thought, well, a lot of things don't apply to smell. Like, what's an object of smell or an object of smell perception? Or we don't even talk about something like, let's say, the directionality of a smell. It doesn't make any sense, but of course it makes sense for vision. So I thought, well, to what extent do we have to change our thinking when we talk about non-visual senses?
I love it. I love it. I love it. So what did you, give us a teaser from the book. What did you discover?
So for me, the big discovery was that smell works differently when it comes to the brain. But it also works quite, there are some things that work similar across the senses, but they're often not the ones we're highlighting. So the big thing for me is the idiosyncrasies, the reasons why we often exclude certain things from our observations, from our either scientific attention, but also daily lives, is these features, these idiosyncrasies, these quirks, these weird things. They're actually pointing us to how the things really work, such as, well, we often say, well, you know, smell is subjective because what you smell is not the same as I smell. And even you yourself will have different perceptions of the same thing, depending on whether you're hungry or tired or in whatever context you're experiencing it. And this is why people thought, see, we can't rely on our nose. Turns out that these contextualities is precisely why the sense of smell is so accurate. So what made it the odd one out is actually the reason why it should be studied more.
Okay, so what else? I mean, you know what I'm thinking about, seriously? I'm thinking about people who have the COVID-19 viral infection. Guess what they lose? The sense of smell. How does that mess with the mind?
Oh, well, so you've got a couple of things. We like to think that, well, you're losing your sense of smell. How bad can it be? And when people usually lose their sense of smell, they go to the doctor, they often hear, well, you know, it's just a loss of life quality. What do you mean just? Like, life quality is an important part of life. And what you lose when you lose your sense of smell, something we rarely talk about or think about and which COVID actually brought into public attention, is the biggest thing is, of course, flavor perception. When you eat, when you drink something nice, like a nice glass of wine or a really satisfying meal, most of what you call taste is smell. And you know that when you've got a cold, for instance, you lose, everything starts to taste bland and it has no flavor to it, because you actually just have salty and bitter and sweet and sour and umami, that kind of savory taste. But you don't have a receptor on your tongue that's mint or strawberry or pepper or coriander or all these kind of different things you know from your food. That's actually smell. And the way that happens is when you eat, you've got basically the molecules being released while you chew. And they travel through the back of your throat, where there's an opening, the pharynx, where they travel up to your nose, to the epithelium. So you're literally smelling your food while you're eating it. And that's also why coffee is such a disappointment when you taste it, because it smells awesome. And then you taste it and it's largely bitter and it's a bit disappointing.
Huh. All right. So literally, this, if you can't smell appropriately, then at the end of the day, this could really affect in a negative way your well-being.
Oh, yes. It can also affect your partner choice, by the way. So one thing we rarely talk about is how we choose our mate for life. And we like to think, he or she is so witty and so charming and so beautiful. Yeah, but if the smell is off, the deal is off. You know, sometimes people rub you the wrong way by the way they smell, and we might not always process it consciously. But there were some interesting studies showing that as women, when they were smelling t-shirts with body odor of men, they had a clear preference for men with a complementary immune system. Like, this is small genetic differences they could smell through the body odor. And what's the real trigger is actually that when they were on a contraceptive routine, a hormonal change, the pill, their preference changed to the body odor of men with a similar immune system. So I was kind of speculating in a way that, well, how does that affect divorce rates? If you think of when do people, for instance, often divorce, right after marriage when they're changing contraceptive routines. So the love of your life might really lose some sex appeal.
Oh my gosh. Wait a minute now. This is wild. Let's just keep going down this path here for a second. So when a woman is going through perimenopause, you know, and she's going through hormonal changes because there's going to be hormonal fluctuations as her sex hormones begin to wax and wane gradually over a course of almost 10 years. How does that change the whole dynamic of smell and partnership and relationship?
I love that question. There hasn't been a study on menopausal women yet, but if anybody hears that, that would be a fantastic study to do, actually. Would be a long-term study. I could imagine it actually affecting it somehow. I can't say what precisely, for the simple reason is that there is no empirical data on it yet, but I would suggest there's some effect, because hormonal changes do affect basically how you're perceiving things, and not just when it comes to partner choice and potential changes when you've got contraceptive routine or menopause, but even in cases such as pregnancy. You know, many women, when they're pregnant, they often experience a change in smell perception. There are certain things that suddenly start to smell awful, like really, really awful. And quite often it's the reason for that is they are paying more attention to certain smells, and especially unconsciously to certain components or compounds of these smells. Most of what we smell is not just one or two molecules, but hundreds of them. Coffee, for instance, is 800 different compounds, none of which smells of coffee, but together they create this perception. But there's a little bit in coffee, I'm going to ruin coffee for you, I'm very sorry, which is indoor. And indoor literally smells of shit. It has a very strong fecal smell. So, but we barely perceive it.
Oh man, I'm staring at a cup of coffee now. Going, maybe not so much right now. Yeah, that's probably. I think you just took all the fun out of this, man. Oh Lord, give us strength.
Yeah, I'm sorry. I can ruin more food stuff for you, so maybe I shouldn't.
Well, yeah. Why don't you go down the list of ways you want to blow our mind today? Come on. What other foods?
Oh, well, so my favorite example is what I now call the infamous case of Parmesan and vomit. And that was that's based on a study done. Yeah. So if I give you Parmesan and vomit, you know what you're like. But smell Parmesan. Smell it. And it smells a little bit of vomit, because both have the same compound, which has this kind of vomity smell. So next time you're having pasta in an Italian restaurant and the waiter comes with, can I give you some kind of Parmesan? You might think twice. I mean, I like that smell, but it has a bit of an association now with vomit for you, I'm afraid. It doesn't work the other way around. So now when you've got when you've got vomit, you're not going to go, I could see this going well with pasta.
Well, let me ask you a question. I mean, you bring up a really excellent point here. And that is, you know, if two people are smelling this, right, and they have two completely different perceptions. One is like, oh my gosh, you know, there's no way I'm touching that. And the other one is like, let me hop on that. What's going on in the brain? Why are they so different? What's affecting the perception of smell?
Oh my goodness, so many different things. So one thing is, it's genetics. So you know when you have a dinner conversation, or you're cooking for people, and you always have that one person who goes, I don't like cilantro, it tastes bad to me. And you think, for heaven's sake, how can you not like cilantro or coriander? Well, the reason for that is some people have a genetic mutation near one of the olfactory receptor genes. They literally smell things differently because their receptors are differently tuned. They're more sensitive to certain parts of the molecule. They're responding differently. So it's not something subjective, just like, well, people like or dislike. It's actually really down to genetic differences. And that's not the only example. One of my favorite examples is androstenone, which is a chemical compound also known as a pig pheromone. So, and humans can smell it, and some people don't like it. They think, it smells urinous, this is disgusting. Other people don't like it because it smells of body odor to them. So you've got a similar dislike, but you've got a difference in what kind of thing it represents to you, body odor or urine. And then there are some people who like it, who say, oh, it actually smells woody to me. And there are other people who say, oh, it actually smells kind of a floral to me, like a flower more. And you think, wow, this is kind of such a range of different things. How can that be? And partly it's down to the receptors in our nose that they're having different sensitivities. The olfactory system is one of the genetically most heterogeneous systems. You've got a lot of variety already here. That's one step. The other step is, of course, your brain, how it processes these signals. And quite often, it's actually always processing smells in context. because you've got what you smell is chemicals in the air, and hundreds of them constantly fluctuating. And many things, many molecules occur in different contexts, and in these contexts, they mean something different. I mentioned Parmesan and vomit having like sharing compounds, isovaleric acid. So you've got a promiscuous stimulus in the sense that, well, chemicals occur in all sorts of circumstances, and your brain then has to make an evaluation of, is that context good or is that context bad, or that signal in that context? And that leads to a lot of variation. Then there's also experience. In what context have you experienced something before? And if it was a bad context, you'll have a different association than somebody who's like, oh yeah, I remember this. This was good.
I love it. I love it. I love it. So everyone out there in the Her Podcast land, if you grab this book, Smellosophy, it starts with a nosedive. Come on now. That was funny. All right. It starts with a nosedive. So I'm going to read this to you. This is straight out of the book. We begin with an experiment. Hold your nose closed with your fingers, then chew a jelly bean. It will taste sweet, but not much else. Now release your nostrils, swallow, and breathe out gently. Suddenly, the intense fruity note of the jelly bean, ranging from strawberry to citrus, will capture your attention. This is flavor as an olfactory phenomenon. Explain what just happened.
So when you really do that experiment, you'll notice, well, hang on a second, the only thing I really taste is that sweet note of this jelly bean, but you can't distinguish them. You can't get anything out of your perception of the jelly bean taste than sweetness, which is a taste. But when you chew it and you release your nose, the molecules, like these airborne aromatic compounds, they travel through the back of your throat. So we have something which not all animals have, which is a result of our evolutionary development. It's that we have an opening between the nasal cavity and the mouth. Like the pharynx, if you go to an anatomy book, you can also see it, that you can trace, actually, there's an opening connecting mouth and nose. And the molecules travel through the back of your throat up to your nose. And you might wonder, hey, how does that happen? Well, these molecules are being pushed up to your nose with air coming from your lungs. And again, you can test that if you hold it. It might look a bit silly, but if you hold your finger under your nose, and you swallow, you've got a little bit of very gentle, very subtle airflow coming, and you will feel it on your finger. That's the air coming from your lungs, pushing these molecules from your mouth to your nose. So you're literally smelling your food, you're not just tasting it. And that's one of the most fundamental things that smell is to humans. We often say, well, you know, we smell so badly in terms of we can't describe smells, it's evolutionary in decline for humans, and it doesn't matter much to our daily lives. All things aren't true. Flavor, eating, is one of the most fundamental things to human culture. So, and smell plays one of the most central parts in it. So this is one thing. And there are also, of course, social signals you might pick up, etc. But this is basically what happens here. Smell is, or taste is mostly smell. It's called retronasal smelling.
Huh. I'm just laughing here. I just had a vision. And there's a really cool, it's sort of a comedy thing that is played on the internet for many years. And it's basically a joke about, you know, kind of guys and their caveman way of living. And there's always, I mean, you know where I'm going with this. So a guy gets up in the morning, right? Now, woman gets up in the morning, and what does she do? She goes into her nice, neat little closet, and everything's kind of color coordinated and whatever. And she's picking up, you know, nice, clean clothes and putting them on and whatever. What does a guy do? He just goes over to the laundry hamper and starts smelling for the one that is least offensive to put back on again, because he hasn't washed clothes in God knows how long. So it's a guy smelling thing. Is there a difference, a gender specificity in how men and women do the smell?
Oh yes, and it might sound cheeky, but yes, women are better at smelling than men. So there's a, they're better at smelling. They're more sensitive to smells, and so women it's they are better at it. There's also so many differences, partly also when it comes to sex or gender, but there are also age differences as well. So there's a smell is influenced by so many different things, but yeah, we smell better, most literally.
Well, what do you mean there's an age difference? What's that about?
Oh, so teenagers and adults smell things differently. Teenagers are less sensitive to body odor, body odors. Adults are much more sensitive to body odor, which possibly explains a little bit why, I hate to say this, yeah, but sometimes teenagers don't shower often enough and the parents go like, oh, for heaven's sake, you stink, or you say it nicer. But that's one of the reasons. They're much more susceptible to fruit odors. They're more sensitive to sweet and fruit odors, while adults are more in terms of body odor and these kind of things. So there are some interesting changes developmentally and as well as when it comes to sex differences. And of course, then there's the issue of with later in life, from the age of 60 onwards, smell is declining. The capacity or the performance of smell is declining a little bit.
Now, I would imagine if as you age, smell decreases in terms of your ability to be able to do this appropriately, that this would therefore influence your appetite? Yes?
That's an interesting question. I think it does. I mean, you do see that, especially after a certain, with a certain age, people eat less. And they also don't seem to enjoy food as much as they used to. So that is one thing. What I find also fascinating in that context is, since their sense of smell and in that context, their whole appreciation of food and drink is changing because they just smell less. I always am amazed that nonetheless, people continue to eat the same things. So you would think that if you're losing your sense of smell, you might just try anything to figure out what might be a bit more daring or what might be new. But there seems to be an interesting continuation that especially elderly people like to eat the same things over and over. The quest is, well, maybe they're not realizing that they're smelling less because they're so used to certain things. Is there some form of mental imagery associated that compensates perhaps for the lack of olfactory input? Lots of open questions. So this is a field where you still can do lots of interesting medical explorations that link back to the way we perceive the world.
I love it. Now, my team, you know, just is dying to know, how did a philosopher, you know, get involved with smell? Where's philosophy in all of this?
The philosophy is that we often don't realize how much we're already having assumptions of what it is that we're perceiving and how we're perceiving. And especially, like, that's not just with our daily lives, but also in science. When you hear scientists talk about the senses and the way they study the senses and the brain, there are lots of assumptions behind that that often come from pre-scientific philosophical worldviews. And I got interested in figuring out the theoretical basis, like, okay, how do we interpret something, both when it comes to the perceptual side as well as the neuroscientific side, and to integrate the two. And I think this is a great chance and opportunity for a philosopher to figure out, is this diversity of studies we're currently seeing and that's currently being conducted, how do you integrate all of these? Because you have smell is interdisciplinary. It's not a unified field in the strict sense, because you have chemists working on the chemicals, you've got psychologists working on how we perceive and how to model that, you've got neuroscientists who study mice, who study fruit flies, who do some computational models, you've got winemakers, perfumers. So there's so much going on, and quite often these things go on in parallel with each other without communicating to each other. And the philosopher can look at these different studies and say, when are they addressing the same thing and could influence or inform each other? When do they go in different directions and why? And to what extent are we really understanding the data correctly, and what questions come from our current investigations? So I got interested in these kind of things to identify what we know right now, in like with the backdrop of history of these kind of research endeavors, as well as to identify potential questions for the future. Where should we go next, given what we know now?
Excellent. I just love the fact that you combine those. It's really novel. And I've always been fascinated with the whole issue of, you know, olfaction, you know, smelling and enjoying, how somebody can just literally take a bath in perfume and walk around all day like that and killing everybody around them. But it doesn't bother anybody. And you know, it's also cultural. You know, a lot of people utilize different kinds of smells in cultures. Everything from the kind of food they eat to what they put on their body. And they have no problem whatsoever. And maybe people around them are having like all kinds of problems. It's just sort of fascinating. And male and female and age. You know, there's so many different platforms. I think if you want to read more about this, so you just got to run on over and get Dr. Anne-Sophie Barwich's fabulous book. It's called Smellosophy, What the Nose Tells the Mind. And if you want to learn more about Dr. Barwich's book and her work, just run on over to her website, smellosophy.com. That's smellosophy.com. I just love this. This has been a wonderful episode, and I just can't tell you how much we appreciate you're sharing your knowledge and your wisdom and your wit about all things. I'm just never going to look at my coffee again the same way. You've just freaking ruined it for me, but that's okay. All right. I'm going to breathe through this. I'm going to be okay. I want to thank you so much for being on the podcast.
Well, thank you so much for having me. This was absolutely delightful for me. And I got to say again, I just love your voice.
Well, I kind of like it too, you know, now that I think about it. Oh my goodness gracious, everyone out there, I know you loved this. You did. Grab that coffee and smell it. And now what I want you to do is take a minute and run on over to iTunes, rate and review the show. Oh my gosh, I want to hear what you thought about this smelly show. Absolutely. Why? Because I'm Dr. Pam Peek, host of the Her Podcast. Follow me on Facebook at Dr. Pam Peek or Twitter at Pam Peek MD. And remember to catch every single episode of the Her Podcast on iTunes or Radio MD. Thanks for listening today. Listen, please stay safe and stay well.